You're listening to Sex Gets Real with Dawn Sarah. That's me. This is a place where we explore sex, bodies, and relationships from a place of curiosity and inclusion, tying the personal to the cultural, where you're just as likely to hear tender questions about shame and the complexities of love as you are to hear experts challenging the dominant stories around pleasure, body politics, and liberation. This is about the big and the small, about sex and everything surrounding it we don't usually name. The funny, the awkward, the imperfect happen here in service to joy, connection, healing, and creating healthier relationships with ourselves and each other. So welcome to Sex Gets Real. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Hey, you. Welcome to this week's episode of Sex Gets Real. I am ridiculously excited. This is finally my conversation with Sinclair Sexsmith and Rife. We talk all about their 24/7 power exchange dynamic. That is daddy boy, master slave, dominant submissive, this yummy deliciousness that they've been co-creating over the years. That's become something really powerful. And now they are teaching webinars, classes, and have their online course all about DS. And it's such a powerful, vulnerable, beautiful conversation that I get to have with the two of them. Before we jump into that conversation, this is the last call for the July cohort of the Power and Pleasure course, my 5-week online course all about your pleasure. The cost is the same as one coaching session with me, but we spend 5 weeks every single day doing journal prompts, asking questions, being in the forum together, plus having weekly calls where I get to be there with you, witnessing your story, answering your questions, and helping you to dive even deeper into the material. One of the April cohort participants said, "This is going to change my life. Thank you, Dawn, for your wisdom on the group calls and these breath-giving modules." Another person from the April cohort said, "I want to briefly express how much your love, compassion, and insight has allowed me to give myself permission to feel pleasure and to take responsibility for stepping away from dis-ease. I send my love." This course is so incredible. If you have a complicated relationship with your hunger, with your desire, with your libido, if you're looking for ways to experience more aliveness and embodiment, body trust, all of that is built into this beautiful course where we get to explore together so that you feel less alone and so that you can tap into more power and boundaries around the things that make you feel good. If you want to join us, registration closes on July 21st, 2019, which is just 1 week from when this episode drops. If you've been thinking about it, now is the time. There is tiered pricing based on need. All of the details are at dawnsarah.com/pleasure course. Please go check it out. I would love to have you join us. Again, that's dawnsarah.com/pleasure course. Let's explore your pleasure because your pleasure matters. It's so fun. Also, if you want to hear more about the course and a really deep, yummy discussion about the ways that our hunger and our desire intersect, and also the ways that we treat food and the ways that we treat sex are so deeply aligned, I was on the Pleasure Mechanics podcast this week talking with Chris Maxwell Rose all about pleasure. So there's a link in the show notes. You can hear me being interviewed for a change on the Pleasure Mechanics podcast. And it's such a like deep, interesting theory-ish conversation. And I was also interviewed on Rebecca Scritchfield's Body Kindness podcast, talking all about sex as a social skill, bodies, and the ways that we have such complicated relationships with our needs. So if you want to hear me on either or both of those podcasts, links are in the show notes. Or if you head to sexgetsreal.com/EP, 269 for episode 269. There you can also learn more about Sinclair Sexsmith and Rife. So let me tell you about our conversation. Also, Patreon supporters, if you support the show at $3 and above, you get exclusive bonus content every week. There's a huge backlog of awesome things by now. And Sinclair Rife and I spent an extra 10 minutes having a little bonus conversation just for you that you can't hear anywhere else. So if you want to help support the show, help me keep doing this labor of love that I fund entirely myself, the Patreon support really makes a huge difference, every single dollar. So thank you to those of you who do support the show. If you go to patreon.com/sgrpodcast for Sex Gets Real, you can support the show there and check out all of the bonuses, whether you support at the $3 level, the $5 level, or above. So let me tell you a little bit about Sinclair and Rife. Sinclair Sexsmith, they, them pronouns, is a writer, teacher, and performer studying sexualities, genders, relationships, and kink. Since 2006, they have produced the award-winning site Sugar Butch Chronicles at sugarbutch.net, detailing their personal adventures and in-depth studies of how to be their best self. Their full-length collection of short stories, Sweet and Rough, Kink Queer Erotica, is a finalist for the Lambda Literary Award in the erotica category. In addition, they were just awarded the National Leather Association John Preston Short Story Award for their piece, Awakening, Mistress Elsa, Winter, and Morgan. Sinclair leads college workshops around the country and teaches puberty and sex ed to 4th through 8th graders around the Bay Area. They live in Oakland with their boy. And speaking of their boy, Rife is the property of Sinclair Sexsmith and a genderqueer leather boy from Texas. He is the illustrator and co-creator of The Gender Book, a fun, colorful, community-based resource. When not serving master, he serves many other folks in the community through his graphic and web design small business, Rowdy Ferret Design, which you can find at rowdyferretdesign.com. Here is my wonderful, touching conversation with Sinclair and Rife, and be sure to head to Patreon and to check out my talks on the Body Kindness podcast and the Pleasure Mechanics podcast, speaking of sex. Welcome to Sex Gets Real again, Sinclair, and welcome, Rife. I'm really excited to talk to the both of you today for the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Yay! Okay, so for people who aren't familiar with the two of you and the work that you do, the dynamic that you have, can we just start there and have you tell folks a little bit about the two of you and kind of how you move through life together?
Sure. So people might know my work through sugarbutch.net, and I've been writing there for 13 years now, and mostly about queer, sex, kink, relationship dynamics. And Rife and I have been together for 8 years. We're in a 24/7 dominant, submissive, kind of daddy boy, master slave partnership that, and we're married and pretty much monogamous. So living together and kind of building our world around that DS dynamic.
My name is Rife. You might know me from The Gender Book, and I also made Kinkopoly, and I sometimes contribute on sugarbutch.net as well. And just excited to be here.
Yeah.
We met at a kinky queer summer camp 8 years ago and have been together ever since.
Yay for kinky queer summer camps. So you kind of threw out, we have this dom sub, daddy boy, master slave kind of dynamic. And I know a lot of people are really curious about the 24/7 thing, especially, but also the ways that we can be really creative with power in relationship, and the way that you just described that, the dom sub daddy boy MS kind of thing, made it really seem like you're creating something that's really for the two of you and kind of growing into it as you go. Can you talk a little bit about how things have kind of transformed from the beginning of your relationship to now and what you've kind of discovered along the way?
Sure. Well, our access point to authority exchange was through kink. That's not everybody's story, but we definitely both like rough sex and pain play and all that good stuff. And so that was an entryway point for us. Our very first scenes and dates together involved that. As just like kind of flirting with this idea of power exchange. It wasn't until we'd been together for a little while that we actually had a more formal dynamic. We negotiated it together, wrote a contract, and it started out as a sir boy. Later on, we added on the daddy boy language as poly arrangements shifted. And then the ownership property dynamic was the last one to come in, probably about 4 or 5 years ago.
I think it was longer ago than that.
Okay. Well, but the words maybe in the more explicit contracts around that.
Yeah. I moved here 6 years ago.
Oh my gosh. Time flies.
Time flies. But it took us a little while to work into using the words master and slave. Those in particular are really loaded, particularly with the racial history in the U.S. Currently, and as white people using the words master and slave, they're in some ways not ours to reclaim. And so we work with that actively and try to have conversations about it. It makes me a little nervous to even just claim master slave on a podcast because it's vulnerable and it's complicated. So I don't say that without an asterisk to say this is complex and we're having these conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought that up. I think that it's something that we need to be having more conversations around. And I've seen Melena Williams-Haas talk about it a little bit, especially in the documentary that recently came out about her and her partner, Master. And I think it's a really fascinating space where the language has a legacy, and the legacy specifically in the United States is one of violence and racism. And to use that language, I think with that asterisk is important because, it's language that's kind of known in kink communities. You're even you mentioned before we hopped on the title holders for the Northwest Master Slave Conference, which is really exciting. So congratulations.
Thank you.
But yeah. As you kind of like pick that apart, what are you finding inside of that?
Well, there's two things, and they both have to do with consent. And the first is that obviously this is a very different relationship structure. We're not trying to emulate that. We don't actually do race play. That is a different kink altogether. Mm-hmm. But for us, it's more just that there's not better language out there yet. We're always kind of questing for the most perfect word, and this is just the best one we have at the moment. It's not ideal in some ways because it does cause harm. The other thing is consent around who we use these words with. And so in our kink, in our leather, MS convention kind of spaces, it's different. Everyone has a sense of buy-in. That's why those spaces are really valuable to us. Mm-hmm. But also we would love to see more awareness in the community as a whole. And that's part of our platform, is that we want to have these conversations and brainstorm less hurtful language and get creative with our words so they cause less harm.
Mm, yeah. And just out of curiosity for you, what do you feel into, or what do you experience as different when you're thinking about like a dominant and a submissive dynamic versus a master and a slave dynamic, even a daddy boy dynamic, but I think more specifically the DS versus the MS? What for you is kind of the difference in there that makes you hungry for one set of language over the other?
Well, I think You know, as someone who came from being a top and being a dominant and being a daddy before coming to a master identity, all of those other things are identities that I go in and out of. I'm sometimes a daddy, I'm sometimes not. I'm sometimes dominant, I'm sometimes not. I'm sometimes a top. And being a master is something I always am. So it has room for all of those other things at any given time, or to not have them at any given time. So it has to do with a level of responsibility and in chargeness, for lack of a better word, in my brain right now, that doesn't ever go away. So there's always this sense of being in authority for everything.
For me, it's the ownership fetish. Is the biggest difference.
Right, like I own you as opposed to I'm controlling you right now.
And the other thing is that at least in our relationship, my limits approach zero, or that's the kind of the abstract ideal that we're sort of shooting for. Whether that actually ever is realistic or not is a different conversation, but that's kind of the theoretical goal, to build up that trust to the point where Sinclair is holding the limits.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have no limits whatsoever. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so isn't that a fascinating way to build a relationship? So, you know,
yeah,
of course we all have limits, and of course we have places where I'm like, I don't want to be in charge of that. And he's like, please help me with this, or vice versa of he's saying, don't be in charge of that. And I'm saying, but I want to be in charge of that. So we're navigating that as a, really as a spiritual practice for me of surrender and of the, you know, spiritual relationship with control, being that there isn't any. And trying to make a balance and a kind of melody harmony happen.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm really interested in inside of that is, you know, I'm sure all of us who have been in kink for, you know, at least a couple of months, if not more, have run into people who claim the title of either dominant or master. And what they're really doing is like deeply hungering to perpetuate the violence of like misogyny and patriarchy. They're hungry for control over in a way that's really not about trust and more about abuse. And so for you, I'm wondering, like, Rife, one of the words you used was trust. Like, how can we build enough trust in that you can experience the space of something as close to no limits as possible? And for the two of you, as you've kind of deepened into this dynamic together, how do you do that in a way while continuously kind of checking yourselves to ensure it's something that's like fostering connection and healing and not at any point leaning into something that's manipulative or coercive or unwanted?
I think that's a great question. Trust is something that has to be built a little bit at a time, and it takes a while. I wouldn't recommend jumping straight into even a DS relationship until you have a pretty good sense of that person. And I would recommend asking around and vetting a new play partner, regardless of which side of the slash you're on. I think that's a good practice to get to know who it is you're playing with first, to meet in public, to, you know, start with things that are a little bit less edgy for you and work your way up to scarier, more control, more areas of control. You know, it started out that they could control my haircut and my underwear. And then, you know, as we got closer and more trust built, they're like, okay, well, you can control this too. And it wasn't like I gave them my voting ballot and control over my family or my religion, you know, like, mm-hmm. on the first date. I think that it takes years.
And I think the big, there's all sorts of little trusts that we build and feel stronger and more capable, you know, to give more trust as we go along, but there's also the trust that comes with fucking up.
Yeah. And,
you know, what do we actually do when we have a big mistake or a big blow up or even little ones? What do we do about it? How do we deal with it? Do we come back together and feel closer, or does it end up festering and never really resolving? And so I think the kind of fuck up recovery skills are also really important in DS and in MS to be able to, you know, own your mistakes, take responsibility, apologize, do better, mm-hmm. change, acknowledge things. So it's, yeah, I think that's a big piece of the trust building too. And something you said, Rife, what did you just say that I was thinking of? Oh, well, the thing about like controlling your underwear or something, I guess it pinged my thought of that. Relationships, all relationships have these ways that we kind of do things for each other because that's what they like, right? Like,
yeah.
Someone compliments, oh my God, I really love when your bra and panties match. And then every time after on dates, that someone makes sure that happens, you know? So it's, we do these things already in partnership. And the way that we do them is kind of just explicit. We just make a really specific guideline for them. This is not just like a preference that I stated once and then you do. This is a thing we've both written down and agreed to. So in some ways it brings that all conscious and makes it more clear, and hopefully means also we can keep it open for negotiation. So at some point, if Rife's going, you know, these thongs that you make me wear every day are really uncomfortable and, you know, whatever, hypothetically, then we could renegotiate. Like, well, my whole goal is that you're uncomfortable, so yay. Or, okay, I actually don't want you uncomfortable. I want you, you know, sexy, so let's switch to whatever, briefs. So making it explicit means that we can change it a lot better.
So it's almost like a living document. The agreements that you have are something that you're constantly revisiting and refining and changing as bodies and needs and experiences change.
Exactly. Exactly. And that really builds trust too, because you know, we're looking at what the ultimate goal is underneath the things. You know, it's not necessarily that, you know, you wear a thong, it's that I get to control your body, or I like looking at your body and this is what I like looking at, right? So there's lots of other options there if we get underneath what the purpose is.
Yeah, Google Docs are great for that. You can just change them infinitely.
Perfect.
And you can both work on them at the same time.
Yeah, and see the history and the legacy of where you've been. Yeah.
Well, one thing you said reminded me of that quote of relationships without power dynamics are not relationships without power dynamics.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, we all come to relationships with different social and political privileges and powers, and what we're doing is trying to make that very visible and intentional and conscious. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to say, oh, we're all equal, so let's aspire to act that way. I think that's a very noble goal to have in relationship, and we're just coming at the same concept from a different angle. Like, well, we're coming into this with our own baggage and our own power in the real world, quote unquote. So here we get to have this playground where we can make it however we want.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think you're right that some people do come to DS as a way to recreate those power structures of the patriarchy, or of racism, or of classism in their own little playground, and to do it up. And there's a way that you can do that consciously,
yeah,
and with a lot of negotiation and with a lot of awareness and education and care. Mm-hmm. And there's also a way that it does end up just recreating the same structures that you don't like in the real world.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think the word that's kind of coming to mind as I hear that is unexamined. Right. Like, who is coming into this and they haven't really examined their privileges in the world, their desires, the things that they really want, how they show up in relationship. And of course, we're all on a on a path of discovery and kind of figuring that out as we go. And as you said, you know, fucking up along the way and having to recover. But I think, you know, some people in any kind of relationship structure, it's not just kink, but, you know, so many of us come into relationship and we just kind of play through the scripts without really examining what they mean to us and if we want to do something different. And what you're offering is that there's so much deliberateness in what you're building.
That's the goal, for sure. Mm. And of course, we both, and I'll speak for myself, I certainly have plenty of areas of that I can't see about myself that I'm still learning. And in some ways, I think this power dynamic is, because I use a power dynamic, it illuminates that even quicker and more intensely because the stakes are so high. And that's part of what I love about it, that it points out my bullshit and my problems and my unexamined places. And also it's part of what I hate about it. It's really painful, really hard,
yeah,
and really, really challenging. And so, you know, one of the things I really strive to do is be and show my vulnerability as a dominant and the ways that I do fuck up and the ways that I am upset or need help or, you know, don't understand or don't feel perfect, because I think there's not enough visibility around around that, I think, especially for dominants, but for submissives too, that there's just fear to be vulnerable and fear to be vulnerable around messing up and fear to be not good at it. Mm-hmm. There's so much vulnerability in submission and in dominance though. And I think we don't talk about the vulnerable dominant and the powerful submissive enough.
Oh, oh my God. Yes. I love that. And I totally agree. And I would love to just hear a little bit more about that. You know, I think so many of us have this vision of dominance as something that's pretty specific. I know one of the things that I'd love for us to talk about maybe next or a little bit later is I get so many cis women who write in and say, my male partner has these fantasies of being dominated by a dominatrix. And, you know, he keeps asking me to do this, but like, I don't want to be the hard, mean, latex covered humiliation dominatrix he's asking for. And I don't know what to do. And this vulnerability that's in dominance of really making decisions, fucking up really publicly, and being able to ask for the things you want, which is sometimes so, so vulnerable. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what you've discovered inside of that vulnerability.
Mm. Well, it reminds me of what River Dark says about the best dominants are have a little bit of a hard exterior and a really squishy interior, that in some ways you really do want your dominant to be vulnerable and to care and to be human.
In some ways.
I mean, in many ways, the fantasy might be that you're the invincible woman in latex who's super mean, but you actually do want her to care on the inside and pet your head after you've had your crying fest. You really do need both. And it's a bit of a paradox to balance those two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that compatibility is a big tricky thing where just because it's, you know, maybe you're never going to be that hard ass dominating woman, but what you can ask is the kind of questions like, what kind of feelings are you hoping to get from that? Because maybe I could be this different mommy type who will make you cookies and tuck you in and read you a bedtime story. You know, maybe that's more authentically my approach to dominance. Mm-hmm. You know, to find like, what's the goal or the feeling that you're trying to get underneath that? And is there some way that can be met here? Or is that something you have to keep in your fantasy for now?
Right. Is it helplessness? Is it nurturance? Is it being overtaken like a caught like prey? what's the actual dynamic?
Because we can get fixated on all of this stuff, right?
The latex and the whip, we
can get really set on our vision of how it's supposed to happen because that's what the porn looks like. But maybe that's not actually, maybe we don't need the latex and the whips. Maybe what we need is somebody having really good boundaries with us. Mm-hmm. So, like, maybe that could scratch the same itch, even though it's not what we, the first thing we think of.
Yeah. Or maybe it's, you know, I worked with some clients recently where we were kind of picking at that a little bit to get underneath it. And where we landed was she felt very expressed as like a deity or a goddess that was all powerful. And he found that kind of like delicious space and getting to be like worshipful, but also slightly afraid of her power. And, you know, it didn't start there. It started with kind of the more traditional, you know, whip and stand on me with your heels thing. But they were able to get to this place where they were able to bring a little bit of themselves in new ways and then create, you know, it's kind of where is that Venn diagram overlapping. It might not be what you originally imagined, but where you end up feels really yummy and more true.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we all have all of these archetypes, right? And we all have these different senses of self. And I think that's part of the collective human unconscious that includes all these different versions of self. And some of them resonate with individuals more than others, just based on our own frequency and history and body and all that things. I think finding what, like, what really fits is a key piece. And sometimes though, it's just like, let's just have a fantasy night.
Yeah.
Put it all, and I'm just going to put on this maid skirt anyway, or whatever. Right. Like, it's, there's nothing wrong with playing outside of those realms either. But when we're talking about something that's over time and more sustained, you really need it to fit so that it's able to keep going and not exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's one of the things that's kind of like has emerged in the conversations that I've had with you in the past, Sinclair, and through your writing and the workshops that you do, is just like, you know, for the longest time, whenever I'd hear someone say 24/7 dynamic, my immediate reaction was like, fuck, that sounds exhausting. Yeah. You know, just like, oh my God, I'd need a break. But just really like, yeah, and sometimes it is, right? But just like the opportunity to kind of get to grow into something that really feels like you, and then getting to use that as what you use to kind of fuel the experiences and the agreements and the exchange. That's totally different than I'm going to put this character on and then I have to like stay in this character all the time. Mm. And it doesn't quite fit, you know, that can be absolutely exhausting. But, you know, finding this way where you get to really kind of be embodied in the work and really be present in the way you're relating to each other sounds so much more sustainable.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And I don't want to throw any kind of shade on people who are in part-time dynamics. I think there's so much really yummy, awesome play that can happen. Mm-hmm. When you have weekends together. We started out long distance. And we would have these dates that were, you know, one or two nights at a time together. We would both travel to see each other. And you can get so deep and you can do so much in containment of specific amounts of time, whether you're long distance or in the same place.
Mm-hmm. Right, because none of our real life had to be involved in that. Nobody had to go, you know, deal with an emergency. Nobody had any work to do. Nobody had any appointments to go to. Nobody had to go to therapy, like nobody had to go to shave their legs or I don't know, whatever. It was all just completely carved out time for each other, right? And so I think the folks who are in part-time dynamics, not a partnership that then is sometimes DS, but people who are, you know, seeing someone part-time, that there's a way that a lot of the other things that are really hard about sustaining it just aren't applicable because they aren't there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we have a tendency in the community to a little bit put 24/7 on a pedestal. And I want to make sure I think that's bullshit.
I think
both perfectly wonderful approaches there's ways that you can go deeper in a part-time dynamic and there's ways you can go deeper in a 24/7 dynamic. And they're both really valid approaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's sort of like, no one would say like sprinting is less valuable than marathoning. like they're both really hard in different ways.
Right. And they're better suited to certain people depending on where they are in their lives and in their bodies, and or just because you like it more. I mean, it's
right.
As long as it feels good for you and it's what you want and there's consent, then
right.
Great. Play.
Right. Fun. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then we're hypothetically at least coming out the other side as better people and feeling good about it consistently, right? Yeah. Like feeling good about the dynamic we're in frequently. And the thing that we haven't actually talked about very much here yet also that I want to throw in there just because I can get so like serious and earnest and like this is to make me a better person and a human on the planet and all that. It's like, it's actually really, really fun and really fucking hot.
Yeah.
It's sexy. So let's remember that part too, that some of this is just because this is what gets me off.
Yes, that's so important. Like this, kink is really just about play in a way. And getting to try different things, feel different ways, connect with people that can take us new places. And to, I think even, you know, it's hot and it's sexy, and it can also be such an incredible way to get present.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All the different ways that we can do kink, you know, so many of us have difficulty arriving in the moment. And
right, or in our bodies.
Right. Yes.
I mean, our bodies aren't always safe for us in general for lots of reasons, for lots of people, but kink is a way to really feel and be present and be embodied, have an embodied practice. I think it's really useful that way.
Mm-hmm.
In June, we spent 3 weekends traveling to conferences. It's partly because of this Northwest MS title that we have now. And two of the three were basically outdoor events. Some people were camping somewhere in like more little hotel, the lodging kind of rooms. And they were both very different events. One was Desire in Palm Springs, California, which was women only event. And one was Boundless, which is outside of Ukiah in Northern California. And they, and even still though, I was so struck by the freedom that was given to people and the freedom people took to just wear whatever the hell they wanted.
Mm.
Absolutely nothing to, you know, only a cock ring or only heels or, you know, beaded skirt or a ball gown or a tuxedo made of leather or, you know, to anything in between, all sorts of different fetish wear, people with full hoods and people with just like flowy hippie outfits that were super comfy. And there was just so much acceptance for ourselves and our bodies and each other, is at least that's what I really felt, that I was really struck by it and really hoped that everybody at some point gets to go play at one of these outdoor kink events and just be naked anywhere and play and meet people. And everybody's so like into being friends because they're all there and doing vulnerable things.
Mm.
That's, you know, that was my experience. I know that's not everybody's experience at these things, but I really encourage people to find one of those and to play in there.
Yeah. And I think what's so important to name, because I've gotten this question a number of times, is it's not only for people who are in poly or non-monogamous dynamics. Like you can go to these things and be single, be monogamous, be asexual. I mean, any kind of person.
Absolutely.
Can go and enjoy and just savor being around all kinds of different bodies, getting to just be different kinds of bodies, doing things that they love, and you get to watch, you don't have to partake. I mean, you really get to make it your own. It's not only for certain kinds of people doing certain kinds of things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And actually at the Boundless event, one of the things we did was teach a class called Radical Monogamy.
Oh, awesome.
Which is basically poly skills for folks who don't want to be poly.
Yes. Oh my God. Can you talk just a little bit about that? I know a lot of people listening would be totally into hearing more about that.
Well, the central premise is that negotiated conscious monogamy actually has more in common with like what we think of as open relationships or polyamory than it does with non-negotiated monogamy, and that we can use a lot of those same skills and practices.
Mm.
That really people in the poly community can get a little bit on their high horse sometimes about we are better. And I'm speaking as somebody who has identified as poly in my life for many years, that we are so much more enlightened because we're doing our relationships with negotiation and on purpose. And I think that there is truth to that, that where negotiated relationships are objectively probably healthier than non-negotiated relationships. But they don't have to be poly. You can have any number of partners. You could have zero partners. The point is that we're actually examining and being conscious about the kinds of relationships we want to have. Yeah. That's the really juicy, special skill that we want to steal from our poly friends.
Yeah.
And the workshop also just is dispelling myths around it, that you have to be poly or you have to be, you know, slutty, and you have to play with everybody, and you have to say yes, and you have to want to all the things and try everything, even if you don't know if you want it or not, you know, especially around these weekend conferences and retreats, but also just in general to be involved with the kink community. I think there's some misconceptions there. So just like you were just saying.
Yeah. Oh my God. More conversations like that would be awesome. And I especially think even having these types of conversations with non-sexual relationships is important too, where we get to decide what kind of friendships we want, what kinds of working relationships we want with colleagues, and being really deliberate about, you know, all of the contracts that I have with clients have breakup clauses, and what happens if things start to go wrong. And, you know, I think it's so important that we all learn how to be able to have these kinds of conversations so that we're nurturing and fostering relationships that have a little bit more of that, like, intention and deliberateness, so that we're not just kind of struck all of a sudden when things aren't working and we don't know how we got here, but where we're checking in and actually asking questions about how things are going and what we hope for the future. And, you know, we can do this for all of the relationships in our life, even with our family.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm curious too, because the two of you have not only been in relationship for a number of years and really seen it morph and grow and deepen, but you've also been teaching so many awesome workshops at conferences and hosting webinars. You've got amazing content on your Patreon. I'll have a link to that in the show notes, and your DS Playground course. What do you think is something, and you can answer this either together or individually, what surprised you the most as you really deepened into this authority exchange dynamic together?
Oh, gosh.
Well, I was surprised to come to a slave or property identity. I remember not seeing a lot of role models in the queer world for that. I know them now, but growing up in Houston, Texas, there wasn't a ton. I knew that MS was a thing that existed in the leather world, but I didn't think it wasn't somehow a live option to me. I always wanted ownership, like from my earliest memories. Like, I love that Bible verse, "I have called you my name, you are mine." Like, I thought that was just like, yeah. but so it's weird that it took me so 15 years being in the kink world to come to that identity, even though I always wanted more. And it wasn't until reading a book that Sinclair assigned me to read, that I wrote in the margins, like, oh shit, I think this is me. Because it just never really occurred to me. So I think that's really neat that you can be super slutty and experienced and still discover new things about yourself.
That, I mean, I have a similar story about coming to mastery. It was a surprise to me. I didn't see people. It never occurred to me that that's what I should look at. And all of my DS relationships, I always got to the point where I wanted more and just kept assuming that we would go up. Sometimes we call it de-escalator. Like, we just keep getting more and more and more and more control, and I would get more and more authority. And that is not what everybody wants, right? Like there's places where they want to go, okay, this is enough. This is as much as I want you to have. And I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Isn't it, don't we keep going now? So it was a surprise. It was a surprise also to come to that, to mastery. And it's a surprise how hard mastery is and how personal it is, how much it has to do with me being a master over myself and having my own, oh gosh, just having my feet like firmly on the ground, really being capable of my reactivity, I guess, that how important that is. So I guess the biggest surprise is how much it's shown me myself and the ways that I'm looking at myself and seeing things that I don't necessarily like and being given the opportunity to do it differently.
I could tell you my stuff inside right now is kind of like, I don't know if I want that mirror.
Yeah, it kind of sucks. Well, but the thing about the opportunity though is that I have this person who has said, I will stand by you no matter what. And so I get to have a do-over with it all the time. You know, I get to be my worst self and then Rife gets to go, that was kind of your worst self. And then I get to do it again. And it doesn't have, I mean, it has a lot of consequences, but it doesn't necessarily have to ping on all my attachment problems.
Right. I'm going to be left forever.
Maybe, probably. I mean, that is one of the things that would happen if I really, one of the things that would end our contract would be him saying, I want to end our contract, right? Like we joke about like, you know, contracts can never be broken and it's forever, et cetera. But if there are times when he's like, I don't want this. This isn't good for me. Then we're not going to, you know, that would be a process, but we're not just going to keep going anyway. We do have a breakup clause and a ending the agreement clause in the contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's something that's so clear about the way you're doing relationship and what you've shared here is just this opportunity to continually recognize each other's humanity.
Yeah, I would rather be with an honest asshole than somebody who seems like a really nice person and, you know, actually isn't.
Yeah.
You're calling me an honest asshole. I didn't even want to say it because I probably am too much, you know, at least too much more than I want to be, which is one of those things that I get to say like, oh, look what I'm doing.
Well, I think those are sometimes the only options. Like we're all sometimes selfish. We're all sometimes, you know, imperfect. Like I am too. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, we don't get the option to be perfect humans. We get the option to be honest, imperfect humans or dishonest, perfect seeming humans. Those are the only choices.
Yeah, and I think so much of what so many of us are hungry for, but also terrified of, is an opportunity to be in relationship with other humans where we can be imperfect, where we can make those mistakes, where we can fail and fuck up and be ugly and still have a space to then say, I'm okay, I'm still loved, let me try again and do better.
Absolutely. That gives me shivers.
And one of the main motivations for me to be in an authority exchange relationship is that I can be really fucking hard on myself. And to be with somebody who can see me fail and then say, like, actually, you're okay. I still really like you. I'm keeping you, is super healing.
It's funny. We've talked about this a lot, but I don't think I've said it like this before. I think I actually can be too easy on myself. So putting myself in an authority position means that I'm held to my own standards in a different way.
So there's a lot of points when you're like, God damn it, to yourself.
Totally. Totally. Okay, can I just walk away now? Okay, bye. But I can't. I take this commitment very, very seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can, but I won't. I'm committed to this in a really deep way. I feel really tethered in a way that is just so grounding and nourishing for me. So it's not can't. It's just, it's won't. I won't do it.
Our coloring ceremony came before our wedding, and it feels like the bigger commitment in many ways. There wasn't any fears going into the wedding ceremony, because like we've already committed to all the important stuff. Like, this is just a formality for the government and our families to be included. But
maybe that's what helped it be like a week-long party instead of, I don't know, the pressure that sometimes people I hear about other people having on their marriage or wedding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just have a coloring ceremony. Good addition to.
So I'd love to ask just one more question, because I know you need to wrap up in a couple minutes and I want to respect that. And you have a course, the DS Playground. It used to be Submissives Playground, I think, but you've collaborated and now you've got the DS Playground. For people who are kind of looking to learn more or to explore more deeply in the space of power exchange or authority exchange, can you tell us just a little bit about the course and maybe what some of the things that people can experience or kind of feel into when they join either the course or some of your webinars?
Sure. The course is 4 units, and the way it's broken up now, people can do just one of them or all 4, and it doesn't necessarily teach someone, you know, this is how to be submissive, this is how to be dominant, as much as it's a way to explore different ideas about DS, different teachers and educators, different things to read, things to watch, experiments to do, homework to do, and develop one's own relationship to DS, and whatever that might be. People, you know, I don't think most people are 100% dominant, 100% submissive at all. I think it's way more common for people to be switches and, you know, top leaning switches or dom leaning switches or whatever. And so this is a place to explore with very curated media, what I think and feel about these forms of authority exchange expression.
The biggest philosophy behind the course is that everything is an experiment. Do the experiment and collect the data. So it's not so much about downloading other people's knowledge as it is about having an excuse to say, hey, new play partner, like, I'm doing a unit on bondage. Will you help me with my homework? I want to try this meditation, you know, and then just say like, oh, did I like that experience? Would I change something different to do something different about that experience next time? Is this a fetish of mine, or is this not have that much heat for me? So it's really more experiential and an excuse to get out into the world and do things than it is about sitting at your computer watching videos and reading porn, although there is that too.
And it's an excuse also to put the time in to the exploration, right?
Yeah.
We can all think like, oh, I really want to know more about that thing. But if we don't actually invest with time and sometimes with money, we're not going to actually get the information about ourselves that we want to get. So this is our best idea at, you know, some places to start experimenting and figuring out where someone falls, where they want to fall, what they want to do, how they want to change their current partnership, or what kind of new things they want, where they're moving, how they're evolving. It's also just really fun. I loved we did it live as Submissive Playground exclusively for 5 or 6 times now, and it's just so fun for me to have all these deep conversations with people about dominance and submission and where they're coming from and what they like and don't like and why, and how that works for them and where they want to tweak and, you know, file. And I think this course now is on demand, so it's a little different. We're not doing it with like a cohort where everybody's going through it, but there are more options for support and connection through a chat room that we have set up, and through coaching individually, and through the Patreon also, which does have the live webinars and people making friends and communicating with each other and connecting through that little community.
If someone was interested in it, where could they get more information about the course, and how can people stay in touch with the two of you?
DSPlayground.com is the DS Playground. It's an easy one. And keeping in touch, my primary website's sugarbitch.net, and then my contact info is on there. Primarily, I'm on Instagram right now as Mr. Sexsmith, M.R. Sexsmith. And the Patreon is also Mr. Sexsmith. So all of those ways will get to me.
Great.
To get to Rife, you guys can ask and talk to me too. But he also, if you look at thegenderbook.com, his work, he's a professional illustrator, designer, and has illustrated and co-created the Gender Book. So there's information for him there.
And Kinkopoly.
And also Kinkopoly, which is what it sounds like. It's a kinky Monopoly game, which is really fun.
Ah! Awesome. Board game most likely to start an orgy.
That is an award to hold with on.
It's also, you know, a little on the goofy side. Like, you can play it with your rugby team, as Rife has done, and it's not necessarily overly personal, but it's more on the goofy side. And everybody gets consent tokens that they can, safe word tokens that they can call a safe word at any time.
I am totally going to check that out.
It's really fun.
I will have all of those links in the show notes for people to check out and click through and hopefully check out the course. I want to thank you both so much for being here and sharing so honestly and vulnerably about your experiences and sharing your wisdom. This has been amazing.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Yeah. To everybody who tuned in, please do click through, support them on Patreon, check out their DS Playground course, and follow all of the places. Thank you to you, Sinclair and Rife. And until next time, I'm Dawn Sarah. Bye.
You used to light up like a spark. Now you're blue, treading water in the dark.
A huge thanks to the vocal Few, the married duo behind the music featured in this week's intro and outro. Find them at vocalfew.com. Head to patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show and get awesome weekly bonuses. As you look towards the next week, I wonder, what will you do differently that rewrites an old story, revitalizes a stuck relationship, or helps you to connect more deeply with your pleasure?
So don't be ashamed. Love.